A sitting U.S. senator has sent an inquiry to a virtual reality company worried about their terms of service. Plus, Rock Band 4 and PC? Not happening. Tonight is April 10th, 2016, and the Bobby Blackwell Show featuring your calls and chat comments. It's up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O'Kay says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
So quiet. Is there something on TV? The chat room? People are already drunk? Big drunk day? I don't know. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current topics affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com, welcome. Head on over to our chat room, live.VogNetwork.com. I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night about the topics. And if you're logged into the site, you can check in just like Tiger Claw and Master of the Claw. Both the Tiger and the Master have checked in some point during the intro to the show. They got some points. If you're listening on the podcast feed, you can check into the show at VogNetwork.com. All you got to do is listen for that passphrase that rudely interrupts the show sometime in the middle. Put that in on the site, and you get the exact same amount of points and adoration and love. A little bit later on, I'm going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number for you to call in. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwell Show, that is all one word, or toll-free in North America, 1-888-36-GAME-1. Or you can contact me on my website here at VogNetwork.com. Go to the episode page for this podcast, and you can leave a comment, and I may read them if I remember to go see them, see the comments, which I literally, as the intro song, like not the intro of the show, but I play a song before I go live just to make sure all my radio stuff works, and I went, and I'm like, oh, Obi-Wan Jabroni left me a comment. I should probably put this into the show notes so I can read Obi-Wan Jabroni's comment at VogNetwork.com so I'm not made out to be a liar. People are like, I left a comment. You didn't read it. I do read your comments. Obi-Wan Jabroni kicks off tonight talking about a topic that I actually hadn't planned on talking about tonight because I didn't really research it all that much. But he asked the question, so we're going to answer it. He asked, what are your thoughts on that we can turn our Xbox Ones into dev kits if you're in the preview program? Does this mean we'll see Bobby Blackwell Studio games on Xbox One? So if you hadn't heard, this week, Microsoft finally... after how many years, actually took their word and said it took their word and said we're going to make every Xbox One a dev kit, because they said that was going to be the case years ago. Around the same time, they said it was going to be always on and you couldn't use games and all that stuff. So everybody forgot about the whole dev kit thing because they walked back on everything else. But they finally started turning on that functionality. Now, realize it's a walled garden in terms of even using the system, not just a walled garden in terms of what type of content you can put up. But they very severely limit the Xbox One's processing power. They basically, in the term, the technical term is sandboxing. So they sandbox anything that you make, even the games that you can make and release. And they did this with the Xbox 360. So sandboxing, in case you're wondering, imagine that the Xbox One is the entire playground that you went to recess in an elementary school. So the entire playground is the capabilities of the Xbox One. But you... in your app, you're going to be limited to only creating what you can create inside the sandbox that is in that playground. You can't use the high-end slides or swing set or jungle gym or anything like that. You are stuck with the sandbox, and that's all you can do. You can do some neat stuff in that sandbox. You can build some really amazing things, but you're still limited to what's in there, and that's kind of what they do with these. That's what they did with the Xbox Live indie games. It didn't have the full... capabilities of the Xbox 360, but a lot of great things came out of it. So I think it's fine. It's exciting, obviously, because they're trying to tie the Xbox One and Windows 10 together with the Universal Windows apps. It's going to be a little bit easier. I do know that the Unity game engine, which is what I used for my previous games, do actually, you know, that you can compile to become a Windows 10 app rather than just a Windows executable. So I can try. I am in the Xbox One preview program, so I can try to put Moon Buggy on the Xbox One. I can see if that's going to work. It may or may not. I don't know. I think it's nice that they finally actually did what they said they were going to do. It took them a little bit longer, but you never know, you know, security and privacy on these things and trying to make sure that people don't use this as a way in to hack the system. That's a very big concern, and that's why, you know, Sony took out the other OS feature from the PlayStation 3 because people finally were able to use the other OS feature to play pirated games. And that's not a good thing. So that's why they sandbox and do it. So you can't like take a retail Xbox One game and download the binary and compile it using this program. It's not going to work. It's only the little sandboxed indie games that you can pirate using this. And don't pirate those. Kaijudo at live.vognetwork.com says Xbox One itself is a limit on gaming. Oh, that's kind of harsh. Also, SJ100 Matt also brings up something else that I wasn't going to talk about a little bit. RIP GamePolitics.com. They are shutting down on the 18th of this month. GamePolitics.com, I actually do have some thoughts on this, so I'm glad. Thank you for reminding me of this, because I didn't put this in. So GamePolitics.com was a site started by a man by the name of Dennis McCauley, and he was a journalist, I believe, with the Philadelphia Inquirer. And his normal beat was, politics and legislation and court cases and all that stuff. So that was his regular beat. But he also enjoyed video games. So this was a LiveJournal blog. It originally was on LiveJournal. It was Game Politics over at LiveJournal. And he basically covered anything going on in legislation. He covered the whole Jack Thompson thing, made a lot of enemies. But he was a very... He actually used real journalism. He was one of the few actual journalists that we had covering video games. And I remember, you know, Game Politics was one of my go-to places. And like early episodes of the show in 2005 and 2006 and whatever, when I started doing this podcast, a lot of my content came from Game Politics because it was an unbiased source, as unbiased as you could get. I mean, everybody has biases. All journalists have biases. I have biases, so I'm not an unbiased source. That's also why I'm not a journalist. I don't consider myself a journalist. But anyway, so he did that for a while, and eventually he was like, I'm done. And he was done with all journalism, like not just Game Politics, but even working at the Philadelphia Inquirer. And he's like, I retire. I'm done. He had gotten a lot of heat from people that he didn't like what he was doing, that he was exposing them, and they couldn't sue him for libel or slander because he wasn't actually lying about them. He was actually telling the truth. He was just uncovering these things. So he left, and this was around the time Game Politics was purchased by the Entertainment Consumers Association, the ECA, and became one of kind of their main showpieces. And he left, and a couple of voracious commenters took over GamePolitics.com. They hired a new kind of managing editor, but he wasn't a journalist. Like, he didn't come from traditional journalism that covered politics, that covered legislation, that covered the courts, and things like that. And they took it over to commenters that were very prolific commenters. And suddenly it started getting more and more biased in its language. Instead of saying, you know, attorney from Miami Jack Thompson, they would say game-hating attorney Jack Thompson. Well, automatically, I'm tuning you out, even though I agree with you in your assessment. But they started name calling in some of the articles. They started, showing, you know, a very pro gaming bias, which I can see a lot of people like, and a lot of people would agree with. But I didn't go there for that. I liked the fact that it didn't seem pro or anti gamer. It just reported on things, and that was lost when Dennis McCauley left, however many years ago, and I stopped really looking at them as a source. I didn't reference Game Politics all that much on this podcast after Dennis left. And basically, it is now being shut down by the ECA because basically they say their mission's been accomplished. The two main people that they were profiling, one has been disbarred. The other, a senator from California, he's in jail because he was doing drug running and stuff like that. The legislation, the Supreme Court, Brown versus EMA or Schwarzenegger versus EMA, which is what it was originally called, it got struck down by the late Justice Scalia. It was declared unconstitutional. So they're basically like, hey, there's no more gaming politics things going on, which is kind of funny because we've got a story about gaming and politics intersecting in a second. So that's their thing. But they did say that, hey, maybe the ECA will bring game politics back in the future. The ECA does own the brand and the sites and all the content on there. But its current incarnation is going away. And I wish I could really be sad about it. But it, to me, the game politics that really got me excited and the game politics that I liked went away years ago. And it has not been the same since, and I have not been a reader since. So maybe it's partially my fault because I'm not there looking at the ads, so it wasn't advantageous enough for the ECA to keep it running. ActDef says, it sucks that game politics is shutting down. It was the journalists we deserve, not the journalists we needed. And I still don't consider them... Like, they didn't have a journalist. That was the thing. Like, they didn't have an investigative journalist anymore. They didn't replace with another investigative journalism. They replaced with commenters who did YouTube videos about Nintendo characters getting kicked in the groin. And that was kind of their big thing. And I'm like, you know, it used to be great journalism, and then it ceased to be great journalism. And ActDef says he actually typed that before I went into my rant about the journalists. So I wanted to clarify that. To register participation for this week's episode of the Bobby Blackwolf Show on VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase Carol. Going to go through this. So this is the part where Kaijudo is going to shut off the stream for hopefully only, well, actually the first story is also about this, but the first story I've got is not actually about using virtual reality, but it's about privacy and terms of service, which is probably a larger conversation, but in this sense, it is actually being around Oculus and Facebook. But Kaijudo's already shut off the stream, so whatever. In terms of just the actual VR hardware, I don't have any of it yet. So I'm actually not going to talk about any of it yet. Oculus Rift, they're still shipping extremely slowly. People are actually paying attention to what seconds, minutes and seconds that they ordered. And they are so far behind. I have a friend who ordered he's like at minute 4 of the Oculus orders, and he's still waiting on his. So the component shortage has really gotten bad for them. HTC did not – they're using a service called Digital River, and I fully believe that HTC, that Digital River and them, they ran out. They shipped their entire first shipment, and they shipped it out of order. So they did not go by where you were in line in terms of when you ordered, and they shipped them all out of order, and now they're out of stock, and we're waiting for the next wave. And even though my order was about 2 minutes after pre-orders opened, that's kind of how you tell. People who ordered after like 8 or 10 or 12 minutes received theirs this past week. Meanwhile, a whole bunch of people who ordered in the first minute still haven't gotten tracking numbers. And we're pretty sure, even though they haven't said anything, we're pretty sure they have run out. HTC actually has come out and said, hey, there was a glitch. We shipped things out of order, but now everything's in a first-come, first-serve. And they have not shipped a single unit since last Thursday into the United States. So we're pretty sure they're out of them. And that was kind of their saving face. And so who knows when we're actually going to get virtual reality. And William Murderface says, I bet the same thing's going to happen with that new Tesla model that pre-sold something like 300,000 units. Yes. Yes, it will. I watched the Model X launch. I know people that have a Model X. If you're kind of new to this, I own a Model S. So I kind of know kind of what's going on in the Tesla thing. And yes, absolutely, this is what's going to happen with the Model 3. If you pre-order a Model 3 now, you might get it by 2021. I know they're saying it's 2017, but that really means they're going to ship the first 5 on December 31st, 2017, just to say that they shipped them. They started rolling off the line 2017. They're going to start trickling in the first ones in 2018 and maybe have more in 2019. Anyway, enough Tesla talk. But yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. I totally 100% not sarcastically agree with you. I'm actually being serious. that's what's going to happen with the Model 3. But if you pre-ordered one, it's going to be a great car. You're just going to have to wait a long time for it. Kaijudo says, these fools need to put it in retail. Online buying is lame. They are, actually. And there is a chance that some people may be able to buy it at retail before they get what they pre-ordered. That's what some people are worried about with these things. And this is how Sony is going to win, because they're actually going to ship PlayStation VR to people when they ordered. And they're not going to have this problem. So that's how PlayStation VR is going to win this whole thing, because they're actually going to ship on time. But about privacy, there's a privacy policy for Oculus, and obviously since Oculus was bought by Facebook, everybody was worried that it was going to be 1984, and it turns out they're kind of right. And actually, Senator Al Franken was, I guess some of his constituents talked to him about this, and he sent a letter to Oculus CEO Brandon Uribe. So I'm not going to talk about the letter, because basically he's like, I want you to clarify these six things. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what's in the privacy policy for the Oculus Rift and using the Oculus service. This is not technically really about virtual reality, but it's about terms of service of using gaming hardware and software and what it might mean. So Upload VR actually reported that when you install the software to run the Oculus Rift, it creates a process with full system permissions called the Oculus OVR server, which is basically the server that is used to talk with the Oculus Rift and the hardware and everything. This process is always on and regularly sends updates back to Facebook's servers. The process's main purpose is to help detect when the Rift is turned on and on your face so that it can launch Oculus Home, but the further reaching implications of it are potentially more salacious. So basically, right now, and even kind of this article even says, right now, it's very benign what it does. But it could do more, and by installing it, you agree to let it do more. So digging into the privacy policies users agree to by selecting agree on the terms and condition, couple of interesting bits that could be concerning, if not completely expected. So there's a section of the privacy policy that outlines information automatically collected about you when you use the services, including when, where, and how you interact with content on the platform, even going as far as tracking your movements in virtual space. Information automatically collected about you when you use the services. This is actually part of the text of the privacy policy. They get information about your interactions with the services, like information about the games, contents, apps, and other experiences you interact with, and information collected in or through cookies, local storage, pixels, and similar technologies, which they actually do outline at a different link that they provide in the privacy policy, and you can actually look at it. Information about how you access the services, including information about the type of device you're using, such as a headset, PC, or mobile device, your browser operating system, your internet protocol address, your IP address, and certain device identifiers that may be unique to your device. Information about the games, content, or other apps installed on your device are provided through our services, including from third parties. Location information, which can be derived from information such as your IP address. If you're using a mobile device, then we may collect information about that device's precise location, which is derived from sources such as the device's GPS signal and information about nearby Wi-Fi networks and cell towers. So that's for the Gear VR portion of it, which is run off your cell phone. And information about your physical movements and dimensions when you use a virtual reality headset. So that's actually like actual text from the privacy policy. And under the policy, third parties may also collect information about you through the services, and includes in entities written on the related companies list. So a number of the uses of what they may do with this seem fairly mundane, such as helping you create an account or enable user-to-user information, because they've got a friends list and online matchmaking inside the Oculus ecosystem. But one line in particular is what scares people, because obviously it's owned by Facebook, to market to you. This is actual text from the privacy policy. We use the information we collect to send you promotional messages and content and otherwise market to you on and off our services. We also use this information to measure how users respond to our marketing efforts. So there's the worry about this is that there's unparalleled level of access to data to advertisers. So before, advertising companies could measure like how long you watched a video, how many times a link was clicked. But with VR, you can actually like look at how long somebody looked at something that was in the game world and use that information to do better placement of something in the game world. And that's what a lot of people are worried about because, you know, of the Facebook integration, and everybody was really upset about Facebook. And so everybody's like, I'm jumping off ship and I'm going to HTC because Valve would never do that to me. And I'm like, you do realize Valve also tracks all this information. Like, if you look at Team Fortress 2 on Steam, you can actually, like, it actually tracks how many bullets you use, how many bullets hit, your favorite class, your play time, all that stuff. It tracks all that stuff, and nobody cares. Nobody cares about that. SJ Wonder Matt says, when a game service is free, you get ads like this. And by the way, there are no ads currently in the Oculus ecosystem. There, I mean, they kind of have featured, like, the extent of the advertising in the Oculus Home thing right now is, hey, these are products we're featuring on our store. That's it. That's all they're doing. And it's very unobtrusive. It's just like the featured area of the Steam store that everybody's okay with. The featured area of the iTunes App Store. Everybody's okay with that. But when Oculus and Facebook does it, it's a bad thing. So Oculus did release a statement, which is not 100% worry-free for people. They say that, quote, users and content developers own all the content and IP they create using the Oculus service. We are not taking ownership. Our terms of service give Oculus a license to use to user-created content so we can enable a full suite of current and future products and services on our platform, like sharing a piece of VR content with a friend. People continue to own the rights to the content and can do whatever they want with it outside of our platform. This is very clear in our terms. Unless otherwise agreed to, we do not claim any ownership rights in to use your user content. That was one of the other things that people were worried about. At this time, there are not many places where people can upload their content to the Oculus platform. As we add more features, we're working to understand the best ways to give people more control over how they share content in VR. We also want to create the absolute best VR experience for people, and to do that, we need to understand how our products are being used, and we're thinking about privacy every step of the way. The Oculus privacy policy was drafted so that we could be very clear with the people who use our services about the ways we receive or collect information and how we may use it. For example, one thing we may do is use information to prove our services and to make sure everything is working properly, such as checking device stability and addressing technical issues to improve the overall experience. Lastly, Facebook owns Oculus and helps run some Oculus services, such as elements of our infrastructure, but we're not sharing information with Facebook at this time. We don't have advertising yet, and Facebook is not using Oculus data for advertising, though these things we may consider in the future. SJ Wonderman says, when these things, same things were brought up to Steam, because Steam has some of these same policies, Gaben's response was hilarious, quote, no, God, no, we don't want to look at or store what you watch online, unquote. And ActF says people are being paranoid with a good cause, but paranoid nonetheless. This is basically, and that's what, you know, Al Franken has sent an official letter, a public letter to Brendan Ereve, the CEO of Oculus, to clarify some of the parts of their privacy policy. And he actually does state in the letter, because I skimmed it, and he actually said, you know what? And he actually complimented them. He said, look, your terms and conditions are very clear and very, you know, there's not much hidden in here. So I thank you for that. But now I'm going to ask you more questions. So it's because they were open about the privacy policy and it caused alarm for some people. And a lot of people just don't trust Facebook, which is fine. I get that. I totally get that. So, this is probably a fight that's more about just gaming services in general and not really as much about virtual reality, although everybody's worried about the eye tracking thing. But Steam gathers all this data, too, and they've been gathering it for years. But what I've heard as a reason why, and there are people, and I've actually asked this question because I'm like, I honestly want to know. And I ask people, I'm like, so why is it okay for Steam to collect all this information, but it's not okay for Oculus? And their answer, they actually had an answer, was Steam or Valve is self-owned. They're not owned by anybody else. Facebook is a publicly traded company. That's the difference. When you have investors and stockholders and shareholders that want that information, they have to please their first people that they have to please are the people on Wall Street, whereas Valve doesn't give a crap about the people on Wall Street. And ACT-S says, we always think in the worst case scenario. Well, you know, and that's kind of healthy in some cases. You know, that's how we move forward, is like say, hey, what about the worst case scenario here? And then, you know, and then there was a response to it. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes up with it. This is actually why, one of the reasons why, and I'm you know, maybe I'm paranoid, maybe I'm not. I built a separate computer to run all my VR and gaming stuff. I actually bought an Oculus Ready machine, which is going to run both the Vive and the Rift. And all I do on it is Vive and Rift stuff. I don't do any web browsing on it. I don't have my Gmail. I don't check my email on it. I think I have like opened up Facebook, like my Facebook account on there, and I've opened up my Twitter account, but they've already got that in, like, oh no, Facebook's going to see that I've got a Facebook account. They already know that stuff. But like, I'm not going to do my taxes on it. I'm not going to, you know, browse websites. I'm not going to do my work. Like, it's not going to be a work machine. And it's partly so, you know, hey, so sure, they can pick up that stuff. And, you know, getting your location from your IP address, the location that they find for my home IP address is actually the next city over. So I'm not too worried, because they don't have my exact location. They have the next town up when they look at my IP address. So I am going in knowing that anytime I use that machine, the information could be sent back to either Valve or Oculus, and I'm going to sleep okay at night. And ACT-S says, Oculus can see everything. They don't have, like, their camera isn't a real camera. It's an infrared camera. Like, so it can't actually see everything. You can only see the little infrared dots. You should be worried about the webcam that you have. So the other story I want to talk about, which has nothing to do with VR. So Kaijudo, if you're listening, you can turn back up the stream. I have no clue how he'd be able to hear me just say that. But we're going to talk about a PC game that's not going to happen. Polygon reports that Rock Band 4 will not be coming to Windows PC at this point, as Harmonix's crowdfunding campaign on Fig failed to reach the goal. The funding drive fell short of its $1.5 million ask, pulling in $793,000, only 53% of the goal, from 1,674 backers in 35 days. Since the campaign failed, like Kickstarter, no money is going to be collected from anybody. Harmonix had planned to contribute the remaining $500,000 of the PC port $2 million budget. That figure would have covered the cost of porting Rock Band 4 to PC, which would have been done by UK studio Sumo Digital. The PC version was also set to include a revived Rock Band network, which Harmonix would have handled that part. It would have used Steamworks. So you would have had, you know, used the Steam Workshop to have other Rock Band songs in the PC version. Harmonix posted an update to the Fig page on April 6th, saying that the campaign's failure demonstrates that there doesn't seem to be enough of an audience to make Rock Band for PC a viable project for us right now. Although the campaign raised nearly $800,000, Harmonix said that as an independent developer, we have to be careful about how much money and development time we risk on a project when we're not sure if it's a big enough audience. The studio also posted a Q&A, which had answered some common questions. So, like, Harmonix refused allegations that $2 million was an insane cost for porting Rock Band 2 to PCs. They say, quote, since we're using our own engine, it's not a simple matter of flipping a compiler switch and building the game for PC. There is no benefit to us attempting to artificially reduce what we think will cost to build this game. We don't want to release a PC game that feels like a half-baked console port, and we have to be very realistic about the time and effort it will take, or we will no longer be a successful game development studio, unquote. They did acknowledge that they could have done a better job with the Fig campaign reward tiers. There was not as much community interest in some of them as they expected, and others were snapped up within minutes. As the possibility for Rock Band 4 may still be ported to PC someday, Harmonix say it might try again in the future or find another path. The company said that it doesn't have the bandwidth to just bring back Rock Band Network without Steamworks. So a couple of notes here that I wanted to talk about. This was done on Fig, which actually was started by an ex-Double Fine person. And it's actually what Psychonauts was on, and I think some other stuff was on. And the difference between Fig and Kickstarter is Fig actually allows for accredited investors. And in fact, most of the contributions to Rock Band 4 on PC were actually from investors, not backers. Investors mean they get a return on their investment. 592,000 of it, of the contributions, were actually from investors, as opposed to just straight Kickstarter-style pledges, which was $200,000. And so a lot of people were like, well, if they had done it on Kickstarter, they would have gotten their money. And that's probably not the case because only $200,000 of their money came from a Kickstarter-style pledge. Now, a couple of things that did not work in their favor. A, Rock Band 4 still seems really unfinished on consoles. And here they are wanting $2 million. And traditionally in these things, like you look at like the Shenmue 3 Kickstarter, right? And they asked, I can't remember what their asking price was, but they had a lot of investors from other places that was more than just 25% of the final budget. This was, you know, it's kind of rare for a large studio like this to only chip in 25% of the budget. They probably could have chipped in a little bit more, but they can't, and I'll explain why in a second. But since Rock Band 4 is unfinished on consoles, people were like, well, why are you asking for my money here? There was that, and then, you know, there was no path for the DLC, and that's music licensing issues. But people who bought, you know, Rock Band on the Xbox or the PlayStation platforms, there was no way for them to get their DLC over to the PC version unless they spent $2,500. And there was a backer tier for $2,500 that would have had all the DLC that's ever been released in Rock Band. So they would have gotten everything. But they couldn't, if they've already paid for a whole bunch of DLC, you know, maybe they spent $600 on DLC, there was no way for them, unless they spent another $600. And a lot of people didn't like that, and they were like, well, why should I get the PC version if I can't use my DLC with it? Now, one of the things to note is that, you know, one of the big questions everybody has is, look, Harmonix, they made Rock Band 1, 2, and 3 in the first Guitar Hero. They're rolling in money. Why do they need $1.5 million from us to make this game when they're rolling in the money from Rock Band 1, 2, and 3? Those things sold like gangbusters. They had the Beatles. They had Green Day. They had AC/DC. They had all this stuff. Why do they need our money when they've got when they're just rolling in cash? And here's the problem with that. Harmonix kind of got screwed. Because at the time that they made Rock Band 1, 2, and 3, they were owned by other publishers. They were owned by MTV. They were owned by Viacom. So guess where all that money bags from Rock Band 1, 2, and 3 went? It didn't go to Harmonix. It went to MTV and Viacom. And then they were like, oh, the music business, kind of, the music game business, kind of, we're going to get rid of Harmonix. But they kept all the money. All the money bags that they made from Rock Band 1, 2, and 3. So Harmonix was cast back out as this little tiny independent studio. Probably, I mean, I don't even know if it was smaller than it was before they got bought by MTV, back when Red Octane was bought by Activision, and that's why Guitar Hero was no longer made by Harmonix. You know, they're kind of worse off in terms of, like, the money and personnel. And, in fact, they've had a lot of layoffs at Harmonix, and I predict more layoffs, actually. In fact, I used to know people who worked at Harmonix, multiple people. None of them work for Harmonix anymore. They're all gone. One works at Sony, one works at Epic, another person, I don't know where he went off to, but they're all gone. And, like, after the Amplitude Kickstarter was done, you know, or funded, they did a round of layoffs. And basically what they said is, yeah, we still laid people off, but it would have been more people if Amplitude hadn't been funded. And they had another round of layoffs recently, and we're going to see another round of layoffs now. Because they can't, in order for them to stay, they have to be able to get these projects. And they've got projects that they're working on, but not enough for everybody that's working there. So they're losing a lot of people, and they're trying, you know, the Microsoft unbundling the Kinect did a really big number on Harmonix. Because they really went all in on making great Kinect games, which I considered Fantasia to be a great game. But nobody wants Kinect. So that's that side of their business is totally dead. And now, you know, they're not able to do as much on Rock Band 4 as they want. So that's kind of dead. So they're struggling to find what they can do. They're doing an Oculus thing, Rock Band VR. Sorry, Kaijudo, I apologize. They're doing that. But they've got to find other ways of doing things, and they've got to find other publishers and other ways to publish things. They've tried the crowdfunding things. It worked for them in the past. It hasn't worked for them since. I kind of worry about them. And believe it or not, Harmonix was one of the few companies I was willing to quit the podcasting career to go work for, Valve being one of the other ones. That ain't happening now. I don't care if Harmonix – I'm not going to relocate to Boston and work for Harmonix now. It's just it's too volatile. Because they're trying, And, you know, I'm not going to say that they're going to go under or anything, but they're going to have a reduction in staff. And ActDev says they even canceled Chroma, which was a first-person shooter they were making. I was actually in the beta for Chroma. It was kind of interesting. ActDev says EA published the first two Rock Bands. Actually, they published all three initially, and then the Rock Band 3, I think, went to Mad Cats or something, and yeah. SJ1er Matt says game industry in general seems to be way too volatile. That's the other reason. That's why I was like, it was a very short list of companies that I was willing to leave my job for and go into the game industry. And Harmonix was one of the three. The other two were Valve and Oculus. But I still don't want to do it. I even if they called, I probably would be like, you know what? I like my job where I'm at right now, which I actually do. I'd rather just talk about the game industry. Speaking of the game industry, I'm going to take a quick music break. I know it's a little late. And then we'll try to take a quick call. And then we will we'll be back and talk more about the gaming industry. So we're going to take a quick piece of break. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com.
This is Christopher Tin, composer of Baba Yetu, and you're listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show.
Welcome back, Christopher Tin. If you want to leave a bumper, you don't have to be a Grammy Award-winning video game composer like Christopher Tin. You can just send me an MP3 with just your voice to bumpers at BobbyBlackwolf.com or call me on the toll-free number, which I would give you right now, but somebody's already calling. Somebody so we're going to go ahead and take the call. Bobby Blackwolf Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
This is the one and only infamous Pimp Method from Lyons, Georgia.
Pimp Method, what's up, man?
Doing all right. I had two things to speak about.
All right.
The first thing is the game politics closure.
Yes.
I am a bit disappointed with it, but at the same time, I was already disappointed when the editor actually first left. It just did not seem like the same sense. From what you said earlier, though, I did not know he was like a actual journalist. On the site, I actually liked it, like the reporting, because it actually combines two things, games and politics.
Yeah.
In a very adult matter of in the style of writing that is just like maybe easier to like digest,
right? Yeah, because he was intimately familiar with both sides, which is rare.
Exactly, and I could actually respect that though. Whenever I could, I would just like send out some like links out to like some people on like Facebook and on like other sites, just to actually clear things up. Though, as far as like the the new people, they just seem to me like very stuck up ish. Like they had like their nose up in the air. They did not have an agenda, in my opinion. They was just so full of themselves, though. They kind of seemed to like talk down to people, and whenever they did like they were video vlogs, whatever. Though, they just kind of seemed to like mock their audience, whoever have like a totally different opinion of like certain subjects.
Right.
The second subject will be like the hominids. Again, that is a bit sad. And here's the thing: I am not a fan of like the music genre. Not to be mean or spiteful or whatever. I do respect people who actually like or play these types of games, but I'm not a fan, but it's still a bit sad just to hear that. When you was saying about the point, when you were saying about what was the reason they was like going through crowdfunding, that actually makes sense. I never even heard of that reason before, especially from like various other gaming websites like the EvoG and the Smelly K.
Okay.
If you know what I am talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of people forget that because, I mean, they remember Rock Band and they remember seeing the EA logo and the MTV logo, and they're like, they're got big backers. And
exactly.
Harmonix was just cast aside. It was sold back to themselves for, like, really cheap, and Viacom, like, wrote off a whole bunch of losses.
Okay. And let's see what else about the Rock Band. Mm-hmm. I was a bit shocked, though, when I actually heard, like, the so-called sales figures, though. They only sold about, what, a million copies?
Yeah,
A million copies? And I was expecting to myself, though, it should have sold a whole lot more based off like this, gaming genre, though.
The problem is, speaking as somebody who does play more of these, and in fact, I was actually at a friend's house today. We had a Rock Band party. They were still playing Rock Band 3 because Rock Band 4, A, necessitates people to buy a new console. And a lot of people that played Rock Band are the more casual gamers who don't really want to spend hundreds of dollars on a new gaming console. But even then, Rock Band 4 doesn't even offer even half the features Rock Band 3 did. And that's why people didn't jump up. And Harmonix is working on that. Like, they're releasing patches, like, every couple months. It's adding back features that used to be in Rock Band 3, trying to entice people to upgrade. But that's partially why. There's a lot of people that just didn't think the game was worth $1,000 because you got to buy the console.
$1,000?
For the console and then having to buy new instruments. You know, like, it would have been a $1,000 investment.
New instruments?
For some of them. Some people probably wanted new instruments. Like, they did make it so, like, PlayStation instruments can be run on the PS4 and Xbox instruments can run on the Xbox One. They've got that taken care of. But some people wanted the new instruments because they've beaten their existing ones to hell. And, you know, so combining, you know, okay, I got to buy a new console and then, you know, all this. People were like, I'm not paying hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars for this game when Rock Band 3 is better and I have it now.
Okay, let's see what else, though. Madcast, then it has something to do with, like, the Rock Band instruments, though, mm-hmm. and kind of found out that, they was actually losing money because of this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people lost money on this. Was a risk that didn't go too well for everybody involved.
So how did, like, the Guitar Hero game come out then?
Not as good as Activision wanted.
Oh, come on.
And it was the better game of the two.
Really? Okay.
I'm a Harmonix fanboy. I mean, I play all these games. And even I say Guitar Hero Live was a better game than Rock Band 4.
Wow. That's kind of a bit shocking. Like I said before, I am not a fan of like the music genre games, though, but I do like to keep up. All right, then. Nice talking to you,
though. All right. Thanks. Good to hear from you.
You too.
So coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California, who talk about games for much, much longer than I do. They were off last week, but they were on all day yesterday, and I want to talk about them. You know, they were not here last week, but yesterday they were on all day. Sacramento, are you guys awake?
Barely, but yes, we're here. Hi, Bobby.
Hi. So tell me about yesterday.
Well, yesterday was an event here locally called the Sacramento Indie Arcade Gaming Expo. Hopefully, I think I got all the words. Hopefully, in the right order. But it's an event where they invite the IGDA Sacramento chapter puts it on, and they invite the developers here locally, but also kind of in the greater California region. I know they had some Bay Area folks and even I think one person from San Diego, which is a good 10-hour drive, to exhibit their games and basically, you know, show the community, hey, this is stuff that's being essentially homegrown. I mean, the majority of it was the Sacramento Davis area. So
they
put
some pixels in the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Here's what's blossomed. And
it grew into dating sims.
Yes. And it's a lot about networking, of course, and getting the games out there in front of people, not just the community, but, you know, people like us here at VOG Network and, you know, other media-esque organizations that were there. But that part, obviously, we weren't really able to translate very well on the radio because we can't just, you know, show people games or what have you. But what we were able to, unfortunately, I don't have the Bobby Blackwell video set up, but I would love to have a West Coast version of that in the coming months. So to be continued, but maybe next year. But what we were able to do is that we were able to, be in a separate room called the Black Box Theater, where they actually do, this was at a place, the West Sacramento Community Center, where they actually do, I saw posters, Avenue Q was going to be in this same room.
It's a theater in the round, basically, right?
Yes, but in the square. But yes, same idea. but with no, actually, no, there's no fourth wall still. So it's not technically theater in the round because the fourth wall is still out. But anyway, all that aside, it was awesome because we were able to have a table right there, front and center. And we were plugged in and able to basically broadcast all the speakers that they had all day. And the speaker lineup, you know, and I said this to Gabe after the fact, in all candidness. I said, Gabe, I got to be honest with you. When you guys released the lineup of who was speaking this year, I was like, I don't recognize any of these people. Last year, obviously, they had Kate Edwards, you know, who's like the head of the IGDA.
Right.
And so obviously I recognized her and some of the other people they had last year. This year, I didn't recognize anybody. But I got to say, when it was done, I was like, wow, that was some great talks that they had all day long. Even I personally benefited from a lot of the stuff I was hearing. They had a guy from a local publisher. And I thought, like, that is something I would want to, like, play on OLR because I think so few people out there, not saying our audience, but just in the gaming industry in general, so few people out there understand what a publisher actually does. And it's so easy to just get out there and say EA is evil and Activision is evil. And you know what? Sometimes they are. But here's some of the good things a publisher can do. And to hear that from his perspective, I thought that was great. So yeah, there was just talks like that, and we were able to broadcast that all day long on VOG Network and bring that directly to you guys. I know we weren't able to promote it as well as I would have liked to because we were kind of taking a chance. You might remember we did this last year, and the broadcast was a little bit hit and miss only because we were relying on a wireless connection that didn't really work. Well, this year the connection we had was wired. And so it was essentially on our end, and I believe you were listening for part of it, was flawless in execution.
Yeah.
I mean, not to toot our own horn, but having the wired made all the difference, and we were able to really broadcast that all day. Unfortunately, we didn't have that confirmed until we were already on our vacation. So, the good news is we did record everything. We're going to put that up there in a podcast type of thing a little later on so more people can hear those talks because they were great. It's almost like an indie GDC. Mm-hmm. If you want to think of it that way, is what we experienced. And so to be able to bring that to you guys is going to be awesome.
Yeah. And William Baconface in chat asks, will any of them be podcasts? We are making arrangements to podcast them on VOGNetwork.com.
Yes, we are making arrangements with IGDA here locally to have that happen. And that should be sooner rather than later.
And I noticed, like, you know, like I think one of your local TV stations was there. And, mm-hmm. and Dan was on TV.
Yes, Dan was on TV. He had a little cameo in the background there setting up for not only did they have the indie games, but they did some cool little like nods to gaming in other forms because they had like a little mini Atari party, which is, you know, the big thing they do in Davis every year.
Bill, the guy who arranges Atari party, asked Dan to help set up.
Yeah, him and Dan and one other guy were all there kind of representing, right? So, you know, they did their thing in one little corner. And then there was like a fighting game community that does tournaments because I know they had the Street Fighters and the Smash and all this. And to be perfectly honest, I barely saw any of the actual games because I was in the speaker room all day.
Right.
I have no regrets because the speakers were fantastic, but unfortunately the stuff you guys probably really want to hear about, the games, I can't tell you.
I didn't find a third room until I was leaving.
Yeah, right?
There's another room?
Yeah, that place was kind of like a little, like, it was like Narnia in there. It was like, oh, you go around a little corner and it's like, where, they have
where's
pastries.
Where's the Atari party thing? Was it like in the corner or something? And I walk in the other room like,
the Atari party was it was way in the corner of the biggest room.
No, I understand that. Oh. Like, I hadn't been into the biggest room yet, and I was like,
oh,
there's a whole other room here.
Like, yeah, right?
And did Loki show? Did you show your game, Loki?
Did I show my game?
He was working on it during one of the speaker sessions, so at least he must have felt some motivation in some way.
It was the only thing I could do to keep myself from falling asleep.
Oh, stop!
And I was jealous because there was actually an HTC Vive there, and I'm still waiting on mine.
Yeah, there was an HTC.
I didn't get to play it. The line was too long.
Yeah, the line was hugely long, and unfortunately, I think the person had to leave early.
He did leave early.
Yeah, it was kind of like a flash mob HTC Vibe thing.
Yeah, still waiting on mine. But it was really good, and I noticed we got some followers and stuff on Twitter and Facebook, so
yeah,
I'm excited.
I talked to most of the speakers. The only one I wasn't able to catch was the publisher guy I mentioned, but I'm going to try to find him because I'd love to have him on OLR, and really anybody that was talking there would be great on the show at some point.
So, yeah. So, thank you guys for doing that. And it actually sounded really good. And it's nice when things work the first time, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. We want to do more of that stuff. Like, we haven't really been able to do anything like that since, like, well, obviously there was last year, but the whole, like, wired reliability thing. I mean, it really reminded me of what we did back on the All Games Network at PAX that one year, back when PAX was awesome and did things like that with us. Like, that, oh, man, that. I would really, really, just in case the right people happen to be listening right now, we are so interested in doing these types of live broadcasts. If you can get us a reliable connection, we will make it happen.
Yeah, and we mean that on both coasts. So, like, if you're on the West Coast, we'll get OLR out there. East Coast, you get me.
And keep in mind, we have hosts all over the country, so ask. Yeah. So you never know who we might have in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, and actually, SJ and her Matt even says, you know, the on-site stuff. Like, I was at Battle and Brew, which is a local game pub, which I took you to, Rob.
Oh, yeah.
But they gave me a wired connection there for that episode that I did there.
Yeah,
and it went flawlessly, pretty much, other than my laptop was delaying the audio, so it was really hard to do monitoring. But other than that, that wasn't their fault.
Yeah.
So what else are you guys going to be talking about tonight? I know you've been off for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's busy. So we got to catch up on what we missed over the past 2 weeks. You know, everybody's going Miitomo crazy, so we got to talk a little bit about that. We do want to talk about some of the news that happened as well. And, of course, little rumors here and there, including a big rumor about the new Zelda. Got a lot of people talking, so we'll talk about that a little bit. EA puts the smackdown on something political. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And also, unfortunately, more layoffs. And this is a company whose games I kind of like, so I'm a little bummed to hear about that, but such is the ebb and flow of the game industry, unfortunately.
Yeah. And ActDeft asked me, what happened to that dish that I want to try at Battle and Brew? They rotate out their menu, so that dish doesn't exist anymore on their menu. But they actually have a new chef now, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because like their chef that was there that I interviewed, he now actually like does YouTube videos in a media company, works very closely with Battle and Brew, but he's no longer their head chef. So like, new chef, new menu, everything.
Now that the SAC IGDA thing is done, I got to start thinking about the next con, which is Dragon Con.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, all right. OLR is up next. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next week, Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com. Catch us live and interact with the show directly. There will be no live show on Sunday, May 1st. I will not be able to do my traditional playing of Jonathan Colton's 1st of May on the 1st of May this year. I'm not going to have a show that night. I greatly apologize. But that's in a couple weeks. But next week I'll be here, so it's going to be just fine. You can leave me a voicemail on any topic or leave a bumper if you send the show on the toll-free number, which is 1-888-36-GAME-1. Or you can email me an MP3 to bumpers@BobbyBlackWolf.com. Facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf or Twitter @BobbyBlackWolf is where I am. Or you can submit questions here on the episode pages at VogNetwork.com. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. We would not be able to make the live show work without all of you. And tell somebody. And it shows not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who doesn't know about it yet. But I want to thank everybody that is here tonight. I don't know what else was on TV, but something might have been. I don't know. But thank you so much to Dark Titsia, Hecht, Sky, VXJSNXV, Doomplague, Fifth Dream, Havoc978, ActDeft, Bacon Man, Baconator, and Bacon Bits. there was a bacon thing going on in chat, which is bacon makes everything better. So bacon just made chat better. Brad from Pod Culture, Burr, DC Nate, DeBlue Guy, Eric RPG, Galley 89, Hitstun, Kaijudo, Kazin, Mad Gatter, MXC, MXT, Noel, OLR Sakura, SJ Winter Matt, Tiger Claw, True, and William Bacon Face. He's murdering for bacon. That is it for me. See you guys next week. Kaijudo may not be able to listen to any of the episode next week. I don't know. But maybe he'll come back the next week after. I don't know. Depends on if HTC sends me what I paid for. Salty.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the Vogue Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.